Accession number 26978, reel 3.
Jack right, reel 3. We have a problem here. Jack right, reel 3. Just before we move on to the Belfast, there was a couple of questions that just occurred to me. First one was, I wondered what your impressions of Malta were when you went into Malta.
I didn't get to see very much of Malta. We just got into the great or the Grand Harbour, and that was as much as I saw. I saw the sort of landscape from the sea, and of course every time we went into the harbour we were pestered by the salesmen and their little boats and dinghies around the ship, and they used to come and try and sell us everything that they possibly could. As I say, my experience really was very little on that. I didn't go ashore. Each time we arrived, we just sort of turned around and came back again once we'd refuelled and taken on water.
Was there much evidence of the siege and the bombing? And
not from where I was in the, around the harbour. I think there had been just outside the harbour itself. There'd been a lot of bombings on the coastline, but as to seeing anything on the actual land, I didn't really.
And the other question was again from the Anthony. When you were involved in the bombardments of the two islands, was that the first time that the guns had been fired in anger when you were serving at sea?
Yes, except for the small arms stuff. We had Oerlikon guns and pom-pom guns. These we fired at aircraft when the Stuka bombers came over. I was unfortunate. I was on duty when we arrived in Gibraltar at one time, and I was sort of the watch which remained on board on duty. The other watch had gone ashore, and I had to go up on the bridge just to keep lookout again. And whilst I was up there, there was I don't know if you know the cloud that comes down over Gibraltar. It comes down during the daytime, and it absolutely covers everything. You can't see much above, I suppose, or 200, 300 feet sometimes. Well, it was rather eerie because I was below this cloud and I didn't realise that it was one of the things that happened every day. The aircraft was the only thing I heard, and it was one of these bombers coming down screaming like mad. It put the wind up me because I had no idea, never sort of experienced it before. And of course some bombs were dropped just outside the harbour. Obviously the pilot couldn't see what he was aiming at because of this cloud, and that's when I took to cover. I thought I'd better get out of this, and so I just curled up in the corner of the bridge and waited for it to pass over. It was then that we just fired a few Oerlikon shells up into the air just to sort of frighten it away, really. But even so, the gunners couldn't see what they were firing at. But the terrible noise of these screaming dive bombers was something you never expect to hear, really. I know there must have been a lot of that going on during the war, but it's the first experience I'd had.
Were any of the convoys which you escorted attacked from the air?
Yes, we had two of them actually. We were on our way to Malta on this occasion, and we had one attack from the air, but somehow the pilots there didn't seem to be all that accurate, which was fortunate for us. And with the amount of fire that we were able to put up with the rest of the escort vessels, I think we frightened them away, really. They didn't think we were soft touch at all.
Were these Germans or Italians?
These were Germans. But we felt that it was a bit too close, but at the same time, we were fortunate to get away with it.
Thank you for that. Just coming on now to, you told me the story about leaving the Antony and becoming ill.
Yes.
So did you have sick leave as well when you came
back? Yes, I had about 9 days sick leave, and then I was called up to go to HMS King Alfred for the officer training course, and this was my, I've been there, I suppose, 2 months, something like that, no, less than 2 months, when I, unfortunately again, I was a very unhealthy sort of chap. I caught German measles, which put me into isolation hospital in Hove, and then after 2 weeks there, I was sent home again, and I didn't get the opportunity of completing the course because they thought, well, having lost, you know, 2 or 3 weeks of the training, that best if I tried again. So that was why I left there and was sent to join HMS Belfast.
And how did you find things when you were at home? Did you feel different because you'd gone away as a schoolboy, really?
Yes, I came back, really, and I enjoyed Beliefs because there was all my, there was my two sisters, there were their friends, and friends that I'd left behind, and we all used to get together, go roller skating or taking going to dances, and of course the fact that I was in uniform, you know, attracted well to the young ladies, which was quite a good thing, really. And as I say, I enjoyed it, coming home and seeing my mum and dad and my grandmother. My old grandmother was a wonderful old lady, and I, as I say, I enjoyed coming home whenever I could. And these short periods, I think I had about 4 short periods of 9 days leave. 2 of them were for embarkation, and the other 2 were for sort of coming home from the training course. So really, I didn't see a lot of Great Britain. I went, as I say, to the Mediterranean, and I went also to several other places. I'll tell you as we go along. Having come back from the course, I was then sent down to Portsmouth again, as I was a Portsmouth rating, and to await a destroyer which would take me up to Scap Flow. And there I was put on board an old First World War dreadnought, which had been sunk in the harbour, and to use as a naval base. And so I was there for about 3 or 4 days. And then I was taken off by the local tug to join HMS Belfast, which had come into Scapa Flow.
And what did you after. Think of Scapa? I've heard many stories.
Well, there are some stories which, in fact, I can't repeat, but I...
You can, you're more than welcome
to. Well, there's... I only went ashore there twice whilst I was at the on this Iron Duke, the old dreadnought, and I went ashore really to go to the Tokach Centre, which gave us tea and biscuits and things, you know, and sort of gave us somewhere to stay whilst we were ashore. But apart from that, there was nothing much else there except sheep and just a few sheep. And of course, there was the old story that, you know, the old Matlow enjoyed the company of sheep at times.
So what did it feel like when the Belfast arrived? Because that must have seemed very strange after a destroyer.
Yes. I was a little bit astounded at the size of the vessel, because I thought all ships were like the Antony, really, destroyers. And then going up the gangway onto the ship, it was somehow or other a bit awe-inspiring, because I felt that this was a big ship and I'm only going to be a little thing on board it, really. But I soon made myself at home, because I was then put on to, once I got on board, reported on board, given a watch, and also told which mess deck I was going to, which for me was rather strange, because I was put into what is known as the writers' mess deck, which were all petty officer writers who made up wages, did the various sort of sectarial work on board ship. And so I was put in there, and I was given the duty of being the commander's runner, which is rather peculiar sort of title to give me, but I realised afterwards why it was called the commander's runner, because one of my duties was to go from his day cabin down the quarterdeck, down below, to the various cabins of various officers on board, and to take messages from him to them. Well, I had a dreadful time in a way, because every time I opened the watertight doors and went through them, as I went through them, I caught my shins on the metal surrounding the door. It was quite deep, I suppose about a foot from the deck. And I obviously didn't lift my leg high enough, because I had, well, even to the day I came home, I had quite a bump on the bone of my shin. And so I always remember that, going through the watertight doors, closing the watertight doors, onto the next one, closing the next one. And it was painful at times. But that was one of my duties. The other duty was to keep a record of officers of other craft that had come alongside or been in the harbour. Commander was very keen on knowing the personnel on board these other ships. I suppose for ginning up time and that sort of thing, it was a sort of occasion where he liked to know to whom he was speaking. So I had to keep a record of all these. And it was, it's a job I enjoyed, really. It was just purely writing. I thought, well, this is good action. I haven't got anything more to do than just sit in his cabin and write out these records and do a few message carrying. It was strange, really. I didn't think it was a seaman's sort of duty, in a way. But he was very good. It was Commander Hawkins. My action station was to be sort of around for him to give me messages should we need radio silence. And therefore I used to have to stand by to take messages from the control room up to the bridge. He was, I think, in charge of operations, so he was not a bad old boy, really.
And so now we know, because we have his uniform on board the ship.
Have you?
Yes,
oh,
he
yes.
Given it to us
oh,
like
yeah.
Can I just pause for a minute?
Mm.
So just to pick up where we were, you've just joined the Belfast.
Yes.
How did you find being in a ship with that many men on board after such a small ship's company?
It was a little bit confusing, actually, to find your way around and know exactly where you had to go. I mean, I picked up the route to the officers' quarters on the ship, the quarter deck area, but to find my way elsewhere, even to find the control room was a little bit difficult because you had several decks to go down. So, yes, I found it a little bit disconcerting at times. Oh, whilst I was on the writer's mess deck, I was given the duty by the petty officers there to go and collect their rum ration, which I used to do each day. So that was somewhere else I had to find. I found the cooking area, the galley, which was all sort of steam driven. Everything was cooked in big cauldrons with steam flowing around them to make them hot. Which even there, it's a bit difficult to know which hatch you come in through and find your way back out again. So, as I say, it was a little bit overawed, really.
Did you have much time to get used to the ship before she went to sea?
No, not a lot. I suppose, really, I was on board for about 4 or 5 days, I suppose. And then we left for the convoy work we left, actually, to go to Iceland because we were going to be based there to take the convoys across to Russia.
You must have found Arctic waters very difficult after the Mediterranean.
Yes, totally different. The Mediterranean was quite calm, except when we had that large sort of electrical storm, which was rather frightening there, just going back on that. The lightning used to flit around the masts on board ship, and being on the bridge, it was quite scary, really. Anyway, that's another little tale. Actually going on the convoys as we were going up to Iceland and from Iceland to Russia, the seas were tremendous. Conditions in winter up there, of course, are terrible. They have very low temperatures, well below freezing. The seas are quite high. I was amazed at the height of the waves, and very rough at times. It's rather scary, really, when they used to break over the bow of the ship and go onto the forecastle and run up the gangways of the side of the ship. And then, of course, when we were stationary, that this all used to freeze, and freeze on the rigging and on the decks, and we had to clear up the ice when this occurred.
If you were the commander's runner, so you must have been, you were on the bridge for a lot of the time, were you? All the ops room?
No, not an awful lot, because we were only called to action stations, really, as we, well, the action station that I was called to do was in fact rarely used, because we had communications on board ship anyway, and we were allowed to use those. And, so I didn't really have an awful lot to do, but it was interesting. Because all the guns were controlled from there, the various communication branches, of course, were working down there, and so you know, it was quite an interesting sort of job, really.
And how did you find the Russians when you reached Murmansk?
I found that the Russians were in fact almost helpless. When we called in at Murmansk, and as we got close to the shore, there were the Russians, the women in particular, on the shoreline, and they even sorting out the gas that we were throwing over the ship side. And they were picking up what they could from that, which I thought was a terrible thing, really. And actually, if you had a bar of chocolate, you could get a knife made with a whale handle, all sorts of things like that that they'd give you in order to get a little bit of extra. Well, they wouldn't eat the whole of the bar of chocolate. They would, in fact, take a couple of portions, say, and put the rest into a box ready for the soldiers at the front, you know, which I thought was marvellous, really.
Were you allowed much contact with the Russians?
Not an awful lot. As I say, that was the main sort of contact that I had. And when we were sort of taking stuff aboard, you know, you'd meet the dockyard people and that sort of thing. But apart from that, no, I didn't see very much of them.
Just, Belfast was obviously Admiral Burnett's flagship. Did it feel different being on board a flagship?
Yes, in a way. I felt quite proud of the fact that Admiral Burnett, or Vice Admiral Burnett, was on board. And, of course, I had to make sure that that went into the records of the commander. He was also glad to have a report from the Vice Admiral at any time, really. We were part of a force of three cruisers. I think it was about five destroyers. And we did this escort work from Iceland to Murmansk, and then we'd bring back various items to take back for the, I suppose, the goods that were sold, or at least were taken across to the Russians. One gift we brought back on one occasion was an antelope, which was sent back to for us to take to Mr. Churchill, but unfortunately on the high seas and with the gunfire that was around at the time, the poor old thing went a bit mad. He was in the hangar on board ship, because we hadn't got aircraft at the time. It had already been taken away from the two hangars we had. But the butcher on board had to kindly put it out of its misery by shooting it. So poor old Mr. Churchill, we never got his antelope.
This was Olga, wasn't it, I believe?
Pardon?
Olga,
that was the name of the antelope, yes. Yes, she didn't last very long, poor old thing.
So when you were at sea, escorting JW-55B, how were you told about that Scharnhorst was at sea?
Well, I think the information came through. I don't know whether it came through from aircraft, you know, sort of spotter aircraft or what. But it was definitely, you know, piped aboard that the Scharnhorst was in the area. So we had to... I think, really, it was the Admiral who had a pretty good idea that this would happen. And when the Scharnhorst came out of the Norwegian fields to attack the convoy, it was the fact that I think Admiral Burnett, or Rear Admiral Burnett, and the Duke of York, which was also in the area, got the information. They decided on various tactics to counter this threat.
And how did you feel when you heard that news that there was might actually be a big ship action?
Well, I didn't give an awful lot of thought, really. it wasn't my job to fight this ship this coming out of this field. But I suppose it was a bit awe-stricken. I felt that there was something going on which I'd never really had before, which was going to be a sort of a battle at sea, and I'd never experienced anything like that at all. Obviously the guns were going to be fired from the ship, and I just tried to think of a way. Actually, the thing that crossed my mind more than anything was, how am I going to get past the guns to get to the bridge should I have a message from the commander up to the bridge? And of course, the backlash of these after the it was really the sort of after effects of firing a shell, when you get the sort of blast back through the gun turret. And I was thinking, if they're firing out sea, that's going to be just at the spot where I want to go past them and up to the bridge. So that was the only thought that really came into my mind about the action. Otherwise, I was quite calm about it, really.
Can you remember what happened when Belfast first made contact with Scharnhorst?
No, I think...